and welcome to Berry Aftercare, the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Connie Stapleton. This is episode 171, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can, part one. This is an episode that tops my list for all-time favorites. Why? The book I'm reviewing. I loved it so much, and it applies so well to the process of healing from the disease of obesity. The book is literally called Why People Don't Heal and How They Can. It is written by Carolyn Meese, M-Y-S-S, who's an incredibly intuitive human whose life work is dedicated to helping people understand that they have a great deal of power in terms of healing their own physical illnesses. I think you'll get a lot from this episode. In fact, this episode and the next, as this is a two-part series. Let's get started. Hello, my Berry Aftercare friends, and I am so excited about tonight's podcast. I mean, almost excited as I was when I recorded the one about the bleepity bleep goal weight. And the reason this podcast is so exciting to me is because the information, and I'm taking a lot, all of this, not all of this, 98% of this from a book. So basically, this is a book review, but the information makes so much sense to me. And the woman who wrote the book is named Carolyn Meese, M-Y-S-S. The title all by itself, hopefully, will draw you in. And the title of this book is Why People Don't Heal and How They Can. Why People Don't Heal and Why They Can. So let me tell you what we're going to cover tonight. First of all, the title, which I think is amazing, and a little bit about the author. Next, we're going to talk about the reasons Miss Carolyn Meese says people don't heal, and acknowledge and pinpoint and highlight the reality that most of the time, people have a choice to heal. So why don't they take that choice and make that something that they want to do? The third point that we're going to talk about is something that she refers to as woundology. You're going to love that. I love all of that topic. We're going to talk about what woundology is and the reasons that you might want to avoid it. Then the last thing we're going to cover are some really important questions that you want to ask yourself when it comes to this information. All right, here we go. So, great title, great author. Again, the title of the book that I'm referring to and going to get most of this information is from is Why People Don't Heal and How They Can. So the author, Carolyn Meese, is someone that I was probably referred to read about many, 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 many years ago. And so I read a book by her, and the name of that book is Anatomy of the Spirit. Anatomy of the Spirit. And when I read this book, I was, as they say in some of the literature I've been reading, gobsmacked. It was like, it just hit me so clearly and so directly. I was like, wow, this makes more sense to me than almost anything I've ever read. It's kind of like when I read the book, Getting the Love You Want by Harville Hendricks, H-E-N-D-R-I-X. I would really encourage people to read that book. But this book by Carolyn Meese, whose last name is spelled M-Y-S-S, The Anatomy of the Spirit, just made so much sense to me about who we are as people and how our minds and bodies and spirits are all connected. We're not just physical. We're not just spiritual. We're not just emotional. And that's part of the reason why when I started my first private practice years ago, I called it, what the heck did I call it? Mind, body, spirit? No, I can't remember what I called it. Anyway, it was basically mind, body, spirit. Yeah, I think that's what it was. That's ridiculous. I can't remember what I named my practice. But anyway, it was that. And I love the interconnection between the body, the mind, and the spirit. And I don't think that you can separate one from the other. In fact, when I do all of my work in the bariatric community and all the work that I've done in the addiction and recovery world, it's like, we're a whole person. We can't just, you know, deal with the obesity. We can't just deal with the addiction. We can't just deal with, you know, the marriage. We have to deal with the whole person. And so body, mind, and spirit. Oh, I know what my business is called. Mind, Body, Health Services. Oh, forgive me. Anyway, that was a long time ago. Now I just call my practice Connie Stapleton, PhD. Anyway, so this woman, Carolyn Meese, what she is a medical intuitive. In other words, she can sense by being around people and maybe talk to them a little bit. I don't know, but she has the intuitive ability to kind of sense where their biological systems are off kilter. And she's so accurate in pinpointing diseases that she's got physicians from all over the world calling on her, to help them diagnose very difficult diagnosable diseases. So she's just got a gift. You know, she's a very intuitive person and she can really tune into people's energy and their body systems. And you can believe it, you don't have to believe it, but I would encourage you to read her books. So I read that book a long, long time ago, and I've just been a fan of hers, although I haven't, you know, spent a lot of time searching out her material. But recently, and again, I don't remember why, I came across the book, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can. And so I read the book over the weekend and I was going to do a different podcast tonight. In fact, for the last episode, I advertised it as being a different title. And that's why I'm not going to say what my next podcasts are going to be about, because I have this tendency to change my mind at the last minute. And when I read this book, I was like, this is a podcast. No. It is two full podcasts. So the next 2 weeks, this week and next week, are going to be all about this book, because I think the information in here is so worth looking at when it comes to the disease of obesity and working on your long-term healthy lifestyle. Because losing weight through weight loss surgery or any other means is an exciting part of the process, but the long-term process is maintaining that weight loss. And as you and I both know, regain is a big struggle because the disease of obesity is chronic. It's ongoing. So it's an illness. It's a disease. And that's what this book is all about. So here we go. So Carolyn Meese, she's very, very famous in the area of the world in which she's very famous, but a lot of, you know, people on the street aren't going to know who she is, but I am going to go to one of her retreats in, Sedona in January. I decided after reading the second book of hers and thinking, I just absolutely am amazed by this woman's gifts and her insights. She's a little bit on the new agey side, so that may turn some people off. However, she's also very much Christian. She brings in traditions of Christianity and Hinduism and just, you know, if you've ever studied world religions, my husband and I were talking about this today. Most of them have the same basic tenets. You know, they're all kind of saying the same things in different ways, but I like that she is very inclusive in that way. So you can take what you want and leave the rest, like they say in the 12-step community, right? You don't have to buy everything she says, hook, line, and sinker. And even for me, and I like the whole energy, spirit kind of thing, some of it's a little out there for me. So I just focus on the stuff that she's saying. And so much of it is applicable and mimics, or not mimics, that's the wrong word, but is so similar to what we talk about in the Berry Aftercare program and so much of what people in the recovering community have to say. So again, most of this is from this book, and then I will add commentary. So why don't people heal when they have the choice to do so? So Carolyn Meese says, and this is a quote, "I believe that many of us are almost as afraid of healing as we are of illness." Now, isn't that interesting? So this is me talking now, not her. So she says that people are just about as afraid of healing as they are of illness. And in many of my podcast episodes, I've talked about what's the benefit of hanging on to the weight. So many people have lost weight, gained the weight, lost weight, gained the weight. And people will tell you, some people will tell you, "I'm afraid of how I'll feel," or "I'm afraid I don't know how to navigate in the world of being in a healthier body," or "I'm afraid I don't know, you know, how to succeed long term," or "I'm afraid of failure." Well, here's some of the things that Carolyn Meese says, and I think this is beautiful. She says, if people learn how fear and other negative emotions adversely affect healing, they can identify how they're interfering with their own healing, consciously or unconsciously. So it's like, if we understand how fear and some of our own negative thoughts and how we feel negatively are adversely affecting how we heal. So if we understand this, then maybe we can say, you know what? I can change that. And some of this is conscious. Some of this is subconscious. So one of the reasons that people may consciously or subconsciously resist healing from the illness, and in the case of obesity, is some of the reasons people maybe subconsciously regain that weight or figure out that it's easier to live in a heavier body than it is in a less heavy body is because, check this out now and be honest with yourself. And obviously most people are going to say, no, this doesn't apply to me. It might not. A lot of the reasons that people resist healing is because their disease, whatever it might be, or their illness can be used as a form of leverage. And from that vantage point, she's saying it's almost an attractive situation to be in. Now you're sitting there going, come on, please. Nobody's going to say that being overweight or carrying around all those extra weight is attractive emotionally, is attractive in terms of how I can get around, is attractive in terms of having all these comorbidities. But subconsciously, listen to some of the examples. And I've said this in other podcasts too. But from Carolyn Meese, she says, illness can be a powerful way to get attention you might not otherwise receive. Now, let me go over all of these and then we'll talk about them. Also, if you become seriously ill or in the case of chronically morbidly obese and you develop, you know, a lot of those comorbidities, additional health problems, you may experience a level of concern and attention from other people that you might not otherwise receive. All this wonderful care and attention, she says, can be seductive and can subtly implant in you the belief that if you ever get well, you will lose that attention. You will lose the concern of other people. So for some people, she suggests, illness can provide a feeling of safety. It could be physical safety. It could be emotional safety. And it allows them maybe to slow down the speed at which their lives are moving or changing. So it's like, I'm too busy all the time. And so maybe this illness will force me to slow down. Maybe it'll get me attention that I'm afraid I might not get from other people. Maybe I will get some concern and some TLC from other people that if I'm healthy and well and can take care of business on my own, I'm afraid I might not get this attention. Here's another reason that she suggests. Illness can also offer the safety of not having to confront your inner issues or change yourself. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for the last 168 or 9 or 170 episodes, this isn't new to you. I mean, we've talked about some of the reasons that people want to stay stuck. So she's kind of saying that same thing. But when she titles her book, Reasons People Don't Heal, These are some of the reasons we don't heal. So for some people, it's like, if I don't need help, then I'm afraid people won't give me help. If I don't need attention or help or concern, then maybe I'm not worth the concern that I get from other people. Maybe I'll be alone. Maybe I'll be on my own. Maybe there will be nobody interested in my life. That may sound absurd or silly to some of you, but for others of you, that's hitting home. That is hitting home. Or maybe if you think about it a little longer, it's like, wow, if I didn't need the help of my children, would they stick around? If I didn't need the help of my partner, would they stick around? Something to think about. And I thought it was a really, really interesting part of the book. And it reminded me, now this next thing I'm going to talk about reminded me so much of what a lot of people say before they have the surgery. Or, you know, if they're not having surgery, go on a major weight journey. At the times you've started a major weight loss program or started getting ready for surgery, you're all geared up, right? You're all excited. That's when the motivation is high. I am ready to make those changes. And I talk about this a lot. And then after the weight loss, and when it comes to maintaining a healthy weight, some of that motivation fades away and it's like, ugh. You know, the same issues you had before the surgery, the same issues you had after the surgery. Well, listen to what she did. She was at a workshop that she did, and she asked the participants at one of her workshops how important becoming healthy was to them. So the workshop participants all had different illnesses. I don't know what their illnesses were. Some of them may have had the disease of obesity, and that was their illness. Some of them may have had the disease of obesity and some other comorbidities like heart disease or high blood pressure, diabetes. I don't know what the illnesses were, but she asked these participants about how important becoming healthy is to them, right? It's like me during this pre-surgical evaluations. How important is this to you? Ooh, responding enthusiastically, right? Everybody responds like, yeah, nothing's going to get in my way. This time it's it. I'm all in. Nothing's in the way, right? But she said they responded so quickly. And so she says ardently, so enthusiastically, so wholeheartedly and so quickly that I knew something was wrong, she said. The response had been mental, not authentic and emotional. The emotional level, she says, is what reveals people's true feelings. So what she did is she decided to test them and she asked them some specific questions. Listen to this, about possible life changes that would they or would they not be willing to make these changes in order to heal? So what she's saying here is, and these are her words, healing has its price, just as seeking to understand the natures of one's consciousness does. Well, that's all deep and woo-woo, right? But healing has a price. So when you think about weight loss and losing weight, maintaining that weight, it definitely includes, there's a price to pay, right? Meaning you have to make some changes. So if I want to get this weight off and keep this weight off, the price I have to pay is following the bariatric basics, eating every so often, making sure I eat protein first, making sure I drink all the water, take the bariatric specific vitamins, get all that protein in, taking the vitamins. I guess that's important. We've talked about that. It also includes the price of making sure you exercise, making sure you inform other people, get them on board, right? There are prices you pay if you want to heal. So here are some of the questions that she asked participants. If healing required that you change most of your attitudes toward others and yourself, would you do so? So think about the weight loss world. If it made you change most of your attitudes toward others, what are these attitudes maybe we're referring to? If you had to stop thinking about people that you might refer to as skinny bitches, thinking they can eat all they want and maintain their weight loss, would you be willing to change that attitude? If you had to change the attitude that everybody in the world is picking on me because of my weight, would you be willing to change that attitude? And I'm not saying everybody thinks these things, but some people have had these thoughts and have expressed them in the workshops that I've done myself. Or if you had to change your attitude about eating breakfast, though you're not a breakfast eater, would you be willing to change your attitude? If you had to change your attitude, OMG, about exercising on a regular basis, would you be willing to change your attitude? Interesting questions, no? Here's another question she asked. If healing required you to change all of your physical habits, such as restricting what you could eat and adding an intense exercise program to your daily schedule, would you do that? That was one of her questions, not a me question. She asked that to participants. So I'm going to get more specific with you. If having this healing, meaning long-term maintaining a healthy weight for your body, if that meant you could never go to a movie theater again because the popcorn and the candy concession stand were too much for you, would you be willing to never go to a movie again? Most of you, maybe, right? What about if you have a food addiction or an addiction to sugar or an addiction to the greasy, salty, or the fat sugar combination? Would you be willing to give up sugar? What about ice cream? What about those donuts? Would you be willing, if it meant, if your healing required you to change those things, would you be willing to do it? Now we're getting a little more nitty gritty, right? Not all that, heck yeah, I'm all in before the weight loss. So these are some things that's really important to ask yourself. And if you're struggling with maintaining your weight loss, you really want to ask yourself these questions. And this isn't a shame on you or an indictment. It's, pardon the pun, but food for thought. It's things to make you think about, wow, maybe I hadn't thought about the prices that I'd have to pay. I just wanted the weight off. Well, of course you wanted the weight off. I totally get that. But the reality of maintaining weight loss, given that you have a chronic disease that's going to work to get your weight back up there, is am I willing to do these hard things? Hard things are hard. We've said that before, right? So Carolyn Meese said, my point in asking these questions, I told them, the participants, was neither to scare them nor to make the journey to health look like a bed of hot coals. It was to illustrate that we hold within us, listen to this, we hold within us, whether or not we realize it, the terms upon which we will move forward with our lives, including the goal of healing and illness. Meaning, we all have this thing in our minds that says, I'm willing to do this, but not this. I'm willing to go this far, but not that far. Powerful. Really, really powerful. And I would encourage you to think, and this is one of the questions that they ask in the 12-step community, to what lengths are you willing to go to get whatever you want? Your sobriety, maintain a healthy weight, your finances in order, your work-life balance in order. To what lengths are you willing to go? And that's what she's asking these people. And what she says is we cannot heal serious or chronic illnesses. Obesity is a chronic illness. We cannot heal serious or chronic illnesses without changing some part of our life pattern. And change is, she repeats, without a doubt, the most challenging, the most frightening challenge in healing. Change is, without a doubt, the most frightening challenge in healing. Now that I have not spoken a lot about, and I need to speak more about that. None of us like change. We like things the way they've been. We don't like having to make changes. And I haven't thought about that nearly enough, that this healing process, if you're going to maintain this weight loss, requires significant change. Super important. And this, she says, is where fear enters the picture. And we've done podcast episodes about fear of success, fear of failure, blah, 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 blah. She says, Carolyn Meese, fear doesn't kick in until the level of change enters the individual realm. Then we have to investigate what isn't working for us emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually. At this level, we begin to generate a conditional bargaining approach to healing. OMG, that is so, so important. So when we realize that we got to make some changes, it's like, oh crap. You mean what? No, what? No sugar? If you're a sugar addict, or what? No nighttime eating? No eating while I'm watching TV every night? What? So when it comes to me, my life, and the changes I have to make, then we got a whole new ball game, right? When it's the general, yeah, everybody's got to do this. If you're going to lose weight, you got to do this. Oh yeah, no problem. I got it. But when it comes to, wait a minute, you're talking about birthday cake, the donuts, the exercise, regular, what? Now we're talking about my life and I've got to start looking at, oh crap, that means change for me. That means crap. And then she pulls the Dr. Phil here. How's that working for you? Emotionally, psychologically, physically, spiritually. And when we realize that it's like, well, crap, I really do have to make these changes. Then we start bargaining. Well, how about if I just, you know, I could just do it a little bit here and there. Maybe I could just, we start to bargain, right? That's not how it works. And what that translates to, and this is me talking, well, I don't know if maintaining this weight loss is worth it if it means I have to. Are you sure exercise like for the rest of my life? You mean, so I have this sugar addiction? You mean I have to forego sugar? Really? For the rest of my life? No, just one day at a time, actually. But it really means that you have to put forth this effort every day for the rest of your life to exercise, to stop the nighttime eating, to stop the emotional eating, to stop the whatever it is that you personally need to change. So Carolyn Meese said that in her experience, when she would ask people these questions, ooh, this is hard to hear, but listen up. What she learned was that most of the group were unwilling to give up much at all for healing. Gulp. Now, that's not really surprising when you think about the fact that so many people in the world have the disease of diabetes. And yet when you talk to physicians, you hear a lot about what they refer to as non-compliance. People don't do what they're supposed to do. When you hear about weight regain, but the fact that people, when they're in a weight loss program, or when they have weight loss surgery, or when they take the GLPs, when they lose the weight, if they stop taking the medicine, if they stop doing the things that are required as a post-op, if they stop following the protocol that their medical weight loss, whatever, however you lose weight, you got to keep doing it, right? Because the reality is you're going to regain that weight if you don't establish the weight loss, the healthy lifestyle that goes with weight loss and weight maintenance. That's across the board. So not surprisingly, as Carolyn Meese learned, most people aren't willing to give up much at all for healing. So you got to ask yourself some tough questions right now. What did I say I was willing to give up before I had weight loss surgery or started my weight loss journey in whatever capacity? And am I really willing to give those things up? Am I really willing to make those changes? Interesting title to the book, right? Why People Don't Heal. Because a lot of people, when it comes down to it, are unwilling to make the changes necessary to have the healing. It's so sad, but it's true, right? So this is me talking. It's me and her. You can't place your own terms and conditions on healing. You just can't. If this is what the doctor says you have to do to heal from strep throat or from a bladder infection or from diabetes or from your heart disease, then you have a choice. As my friend Laura Preston says, we all have choices. You have a choice. Do it or don't do it. It's really up to you. So once you place conditions on healing, well, I'm only going to do it if I can drink on Thursdays, or I'm only going to do it if I can eat sugar on the weekends. Once you place conditions on healing, all you can achieve is conditional healing. That's a fact. True healing, she says, is one of the most frightening journeys anyone can undertake. And that is a comforting thing, right? It's comforting for me to hear this because it's like, crap. It is uncomfortable to make changes. It is uncomfortable to have to give up things that we enjoy or get pleasure from, or, you know, it's just uncomfortable. And it's one of the most frightening things. But you have the choice. You can do it or you don't have to do it. The next part that I'm going to talk about from her book is one of my absolute favorites. And she refers to this term that she created as woundology. And if you've listened to my podcasts, you know that I talk a lot about healing from childhood trauma and childhood wounds with an emphasis on healing from them as opposed to staying stuck in them. Many, many, many years ago, when I first found my way into recovery, I went through treatment. This was way before I was a therapist. I had gone to treatment and I was seeing a therapist and I was going to the 12-step meetings. And at that time, adult children of alcoholics was a big thing, right? There were meetings like an AA meeting or an OA meeting where people who grew up in alcoholic homes would go for support and encouragement from other people and to kind of get some validation and affirmation that, wow, yeah, that was, you know, I experienced that too. And you know how I feel. So what I experienced in those meetings, I went to my therapist and I was like, you know, after going to them for a while, I was like, you know, it seems to me that a lot of people at these meetings, they don't want to make any changes. They just want to stay stuck and be miserable and bitch and moan about all the things that happened to them. I mean, I get the good part of having some people who really get what you're going through, but most of these people want to stay stuck. And she was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you recognize that. So you want to, what they do, with one of the things they say in the 12-step community is you want to stick with the winners. You want to stick with the people who understand that having grown up in an alcoholic home may have had some adverse consequences on you, but you want to heal. You want to heal. You want to get past that. You don't want to stay stuck and live there for the rest of your life. So this section in Carolyn Meese's book, where she talks about woundology, was really exciting to me. So she says that in her work, as she got more experienced in her work that she was doing, she felt like she was being directed to pay attention to the ways we expect to heal our lives through therapy and support groups. Not a bad thing, she says. Absolutely not a bad thing. But she said she saw so many people in the midst of a, quote, process of healing, right? They're doing these things. But she also saw a lot of people staying stuck. So she said they're striving to confront their wounds, right? They're valid wounds. They're working hard to find some meaning from these terrible past experiences and these traumas. You know, they're having compassion for other people. Other people have compassion for what they've gone through. But she said some of these people just weren't healing. They've redefined their lives around their wounds and the process of accepting them. They're not working to get beyond the wounds. In fact, they're stuck in their wounds. And that's exactly what I saw at some of those meetings a long time ago. And while I and she and many, many therapists, Tabitha Johnson, who's part of Barry Aftercare, many, you know, most marriage and family therapists, we're going to try to get you to talk about the wounds, but not to stay stuck in them, but so you can find ways to work through them and work past them. So you're not living in that mindset of being a victim or being, oh, woe is me, right? No, we want you to heal from the wounds so you can heal from your current illnesses. So, but what she was saying is what these people were, you know, were not doing was trying to get beyond them. They were stuck. She then recognized that part of what she was meant to do, part of her purpose, was to challenge these assumptions that a lot of people had held dear, right? The assumption that everyone who's wounded, everyone who is ill, everybody who has a disease, obesity is a disease. She said, the truth is, not everybody who has been wounded, not everybody who has a disease wants to recover. Shocking. She's like, some people don't want the full recovery of their health, which to us is, to me, is like, what? Back to the very beginning of this talk, when I said she talked about the reasons people want to stay stuck sometimes, is they get care, they get nurturing, they get affection, they get help. They get compassion, and they're afraid they wouldn't have that without it. They're afraid of change, all of those things. So she's saying some people want to stay stuck and ill. I'm asking you, what about you? Because I know that I don't want to stay stuck. And I know that I have people in my life who will call my butt out on it if I'm continuing to do the same thing over and over and it's not working for me. The definition of insanity, right? So she began to think of this attitude of staying stuck as woundology, right? We have these legit wounds. You know, a lot of people experience neglect, abuse, trauma as kids, and they have legitimately been wounded. But those who want to stay stuck in that and kind of live that out and tell everybody about their war stories, not literal, some literal war stories, but some figuratively, right? Oh my God, I had the worst childhood. Well, I had a worse one than you. We're going to one up each other's worst childhoods, right? She thinks of it as woundology. And she says she's become convinced that people who define themselves by their wounds, not only do they have a hard time recovering from illnesses, but they open themselves up to illness. She goes on to say that people around the world are confusing the therapeutic value of self-expression, like I'm going to talk about what happened to me, which is a good thing. She said they're confusing that, the therapeutic value, meaning it's a good thing to talk about what happened to you. They're confusing with permission to manipulate other people with those wounds. What? Right? I want you to feel sorry for me. I want you to not expect anything from me because, oh my goodness, I've been so wounded. How could you expect anything from me? So people manipulate with their illnesses. I'm not talking to you, but most people don't recognize when they're doing that. So she says, instead of viewing the uncovering of the wounds, which is a good thing, as an early stage of the healing process, they're using their wounds as a flag. Like I'm waving my flag, right? And they're taking people hostage. Right? Don't you dare call me out because don't you know I've been wounded? Don't you know I was mistreated as a child? You can never talk to me that way. Don't you ever confront me on anything because I'm a wounded child. No, that's not how life works. At some point, we have to grow up. We have to not use our wounds to maintain a lifelong stance as a victim. So if you're waving your flag, I suffer from the disease of diabetes, you know, be kind to me, I suffer from the disease of obesity. Don't confront me. I suffer from the disease of growing up in an alcoholic home. Don't talk to me about boundary. We're waving the flag, right? We're making a lot of noise as opposed to healing ourselves. So she said, and this is part of her gift, her intuition. She began to discern when a person was going through this specific stage of healing that requires you to witness, right? Requires somebody to hear you. And that's really important, right? Brené Brown talks a lot about finding somebody who's going to hear you and not judge you. They're going to listen with compassion. That helps us heal from the shame from the things that happened. Very important step in the healing process. But moving beyond that is more critical, right? So Carolyn Meese is saying she can tell, and a lot of therapists and even a lot of non-trained people can tell if somebody's staying stuck in their woundedness or if they're using it to manipulate. Why is it so hard to give up a wound, she says. Well, if we let go of certain things, again, it's back to, then we have to change. And change is scary. She says, the reality is that people are actually more afraid of change than they are of death. They don't want to give something up because, listen to this, it becomes our first language of intimacy. What does that mean? It means if I'm sick, you'll care for me and I feel cared for. It means if I need help getting off out of my chair, then you are here to help me and I have somebody. I'm not alone. As always, I record at night and I start coughing. And you know what happened earlier today? Sorry for the noise. I'm getting a cough drop. When I was getting ready to record this, side note, I coughed really hard and I got a bloody nose. How bizarre. Okay. So back to, it's actually, we're more afraid of change than of death. So it's really hard. If your illness gets you intimacy, or if it gets you a sense of closeness or a sense of being cared for. And a lot of people create their romantic life, their social life around bonding with wounds. We're going to talk about that in a minute. To most people, she says, the idea of giving that up is too shattering. So we bond around our wounds. Let's think about this for a minute. Let's think about the people who do things like go to Weight Watchers for 20 years, but they don't make any changes. Let's think about the people who go to 12-step meetings, but they continue to use, but they go to the meetings to bond with other people around their same wound. We're all wounded. Or the adult children of alcoholics meetings that I was talking about a minute ago. We go to these meetings because, sorry about that, really gross, I know. We go to these meetings because other people grew up in this wounding household of alcoholic parents, or we go to the meeting because the people at the OA meeting have all struggled with the food and the overeating, or we go to whatever meeting we go to. So our social life is bonded around our wound. But you know, there are people in those meetings who never make any changes. So the idea of giving up the group or the romantic person, we'll talk about that in just a minute, or the social life I've developed at the Weight Watchers meetings or the OA meetings or the AA meetings, and then we go out and we use together, we go to the restaurant, we go get high together, we whatever. To most people, she says, the idea of giving that up is too shattering. She says, avoid the temptation to speak woundology. Because this is where martyrs and victims can come from. And being a martyr or being a victim can become hypnotic. And people become addicted to the support, right? Oh, woe is us, woe is us. Now, again, it's not saying that OA, AA, Weight Watchers, those are great, great support systems, but they're not meant to be used as a pity party. They're used, the people stick with the winners at those meetings. Go to the meetings, find the people who are making the changes, not the people who want to be there lifelong for the support that it offers without the change. That's not who you want to hang out with. You don't want to be a big victim. You don't want to be a martyr. You know, it's just, not attractive unless you're trying to attract, and this is where we're going to talk about the romantic thing just a little bit. Unless you want to attract an equally unhealthy person, only they're not the victim or the martyr. They're the person who needs to be needed. They need to fix you. They need to rescue you. So if you are a victim or a martyr, and oh, you're so, you know, poor me. Oh my God. I have all these woes. I have all these illnesses. I have all these problems. And then we have somebody who's going to be a fixer. Well, guess what? A lot of times these two equally unhealthy people bond over these wounds. The fixer is, I need to be needed because nobody ever needed me. Nobody ever cared for me. Nobody ever found me to be important. So the wounded person, the martyr, the victim definitely needs me. So a lot of times people find romantic relationships out of unhealthy wounds. Or think about, okay, this is may hit in a hard way, but think about a lot of times people partner up with people they meet, maybe at AA or maybe in surgery, bariatric surgery support groups. Not that there's anything wrong with that, unless you don't have anything in common other than your woundedness. Because after a time, hopefully, that's not going to be something that holds you together very long. So you're going to develop these unhealthy relationships. So what Carolyn Meese says, many people describe their soulmate as the person they've finally found who understands this emotional pain that they've experienced. So maybe it's, you understand this trauma with obesity, or you understand this trauma of growing up in a childhood home with alcoholic parents, or maybe you understand the trauma of sexual abuse or being physically abused, whatever it is. So we bond over this wound, right? This emotional pain. And it can certainly feel romantic, right? They get me. They understand me. You know, this relationship is, oh, so wonderful. And oh my God, I found my person. However, if the relationship has its foundation in injury, in pain, in fear, in trauma, in woundedness, the pain then, this is Carolyn Meese talking and it's brilliant, becomes a prerequisite for remaining close to and needing the other person. And healing can be seen as a positive threat to that bond. So if we've got two people who bond over, oh my God, we're alcoholics and nobody gets me and nobody gets me except you get me and you get me. And one person decides to stay a victim and a martyr, but one person says, you know what? I'm going to stick with the winners and I'm going to get past my woundedness and past my trauma and past my unhealthiness. And I'm going to grow as a person. I'm going to use all the tools and the tips. Same with obesity. We bond over, oh my gosh, we've been so criticized by the public and so, you know, embarrassed by our families and so put down by other people. We're bonding over our wound. Well, what happens if one person says, you know what? I'm learning all these tools in my bariatric support group and in bariatric care and from my mentor. And the other one's like, I don't want to make these changes. You're not going to be as close as you once were, because if one person wants to heal and grow and the other doesn't, you're not going to be compatible anymore. So it's not a horrible thing to find somebody who has suffered the same thing, but you both got to be willing to grow, because if you both stay stuck, then your relationship is demanded in nothing but this trauma, not a healthy kind of relationship. So, and this is true in anything. It doesn't have to be the disease of obesity or the disease of addiction. It's anything. If, you know, if one person wants to stay like a teenager or a young adult and the other person wants to grow into a healthy adult, people aren't going to have as much in common. So if one person makes the choices to truly heal and grow physically, emotionally, spiritually, and the person doesn't, then they're no longer going to be compatible. And we do see this in a lot of post-op relationships, not just the people who meet because they both had surgery or whatever, but in any relationship where one person loses a lot of weight, whether the other one's heavy or not. But if one person decides to grow and change and develop a truly overall healthy lifestyle, and the other one chooses not to join them, they're not going to be compatible anymore. So be careful of that. And then that back to that victim mentality just a little bit. You know, if you go into those past memories, but you stay stuck or you come out feeling more like a victim, like if your attitude in life is C, you know, I just can't win. No matter what I do, it's never good enough. I'm never going to succeed in life, whatever, right? If you maintain that, to heal, you've got to move past that. You've got to do what Carolyn Meese says, time travel, with the genuine intention of seeking and breaking repetitious patterns. Gain insights, gain some tools, get some learning, get some therapy, get a coach. Those are the kinds of things we talk about. If you just have surgery and don't do any other work, it's not likely you're going to keep that weight off. I've seen it. You've seen it. A lot of people, if they've had other issues, some people have the disease of obesity and it's pretty much a biological issue for them, but not for most people. Most people have other struggles. So you've got to move past this woundedness. You have to move past the trauma, but you have to address it. Like she says, it's a critical part of the early stages of healing. It's not the be all and end all, because once you've been able to work through the traumas or the abuse or the neglect, then you got a lot of skills to learn to be a healthy adult. So remember, there are positive aspects of support groups and there are some cautions. And Carolyn Meese, and I agree, here's what she says. Certainly, the healing intention behind support groups is honorable. Absolutely. It deserves to be acknowledged. A lot of people, Connie included, have benefited and continue to benefit from being in them. I love the 12 steps. I love a lot of, you know, I love OA. I love AA. I love Weight Watchers. I think there's so much benefit from all of these things. But in addition to the healing support they provide, there is that other unhealthy dynamic that you've got to be aware of. And here's what she writes. Because the underlying criterion for remaining a member is continuing need for support, one must accept the group message, remain unhealed. So I've been a fan of the 12 steps AA for 35 years. I don't go to meetings like I used to. I think the reading and the information is relevant my entire life, but I don't go to a newcomer's meeting because I'm not a newcomer. But for some groups and some meetings, you have to remain different than in an unhealthy way from the rest of life. That's not what the deal is. And she refers to the Buddha, one of his most famous sayings. And he says, my teachings are a raft, he said, meant to help you cross over the river. Once you get to the other shore, set them down and get on with your life. The other shore was Buddha's way of describing enlightenment, the goal of his teaching. Once enlightened, continue to live your life, he was saying. Don't just carry the raft around with you. We're not meant to stay wounded. We're supposed to move through the tragedies and challenges of our lives and help each other move through the many painful episodes of life. But remaining stuck in the power of the wounds blocks our own transformation. We overlook the greater gifts. Ooh, listen to this. We overlook the greater gifts inherent in our wounds, the strength to overcome them, and the lessons that we're meant to receive through them. Wounds are the means through which we enter the hearts of other people. They're meant to teach us to become compassionate and wise. I love this. And that was straight out of her book. So the Buddha basically was saying, listen, learn from me, but remember that what I'm teaching you is a raft. It's meant to help you over the rough parts of the river. Then Don't just carry the wounds around with you forever. Let it go. Get on with your life. So as a post-op or as a person who's losing a lot of weight from whatever means, learn the tools of living a healthy lifestyle. Do the work that you've got to do. If that work means you've got to address childhood wounds, then address them and move on from them. If it means you have to learn healthy communication skills, then learn them and use them as you go through the rest of your life. If it means that you have to learn to set boundaries, if it means that you have to learn how to exercise, if it means you need to develop healthy habits so you continue on, do the work you need to do and then get on with your life. Don't go 20 years from now up to a person you've never met and say, hi, my name is Connie and I went to treatment 35 years ago. Who gives a rat's patoot? Get on with life. Don't go to somebody 15 years from now and the first thing you say to them is, hi, I'm so-and-so and I had bariatric surgery 15 years ago. Get on with your life. Live a healthy life and learn from your illness. Learn from your disease. What do you need to learn? Well, what she's saying is we need to learn to become compassionate and wise. I'll tell you what I learned. One of the greatest lessons that I learned and why I'm a therapist is because I learned to have compassion for other people. When I went into treatment, I thought I was better than most people in that treatment group because their lives looked worse than mine. But what I learned is on the inside, anybody struggling with any kind of illness, whether it's addiction, obesity, childhood trauma, poverty, homelessness, diabetes, we all have fear. We all have struggles. We all have imposter syndrome. Am I good enough? Do I belong here? We all have shame to overcome. We all have things to learn. People are people. We all have equal value. And so what I learned is that just because I had a lot more opportunity, I had a lot more privilege in my life, a lot less than other people if we're talking about money, but a lot more as far as opportunity. That didn't make me better. That didn't mean I worked harder than other people. It means I was born into a place where I had more opportunity to take advantage of more things. So I learned to be compassionate, that just because some people don't have what I have or other people have more, we're all humans. We have equal value. I don't care if you're a bazillionaire, if you don't have a dime, we all have equal value. I don't care if you're morbidly obese or too thin. We all have equal value. I don't care what disease you have, what language you speak. It doesn't matter what color your skin is, your hair color, freckles, no freckles. We all have equal value. And I had to learn through my disease of addiction that we to have compassion for everyone. And so why I went on to do what I do is to help other people learn. You got to move through your things. You got to learn skills. You got to become compassionate. You got to take responsibility for whatever disease you've got and learn from it. What can you learn from it? All right. So the last thing we're going to talk about tonight, and then I'll tell you how we're going to continue this book review next time. What are some positive purposes for getting a disease? Again, it could be cancer. It could be any kind of disease. Is to remember that, first of all, negativity is not the only source of illness. It can also, this is Carolyn Meese, it can also emerge as the answer to a prayer. What? What does that mean? All right. It can physically guide us onto a path of insight and learning upon which we would otherwise never have set foot. It may be a catalyst for expanding personal consciousness and understanding the greater meaning of life. And I will tell you, my many diseases, anorexia, depression, anxiety, addiction, have led me to prayer, learning, guidance, insight. If I didn't have those things, I would never have probably gone down the road of self-exploration. I would have maybe become snooty and holier than thou and extremely judgmental, which I can still struggle with at times. But it helped me to learn compassion, humility, the value of every single human being on this planet, and that life can be better. We can work regardless of what diseases we may have. We can use it to our benefit, and it may be an answer to a prayer to find a better kind of life than we ever would have imagined. And that's exactly what it did for me. Illness, she says, may also convey the message that you got to change your life quite drastically. Anybody with the disease of obesity relate to that? Obesity, let me change that from illness to obesity, may also convey the message that you got to change your life quite drastically. Again, she says, because change is among the most frightening aspects of life, you may fear change more intensely than illness and enter into a pattern of postponing the changes you need to make. Well, if you postpone the changes you need to make, or if you have surgery or take a GLP or go through a medical weight loss program and you make the changes, but only for a short time, then you're going to get what you always had. And you're going to get those comorbidities, those comorbid diseases back, and you're going to land right where you were. If you don't embrace your fear of change and get some help for it, then you're going to get pretty much back to where you were. So your illness says you need to make some major changes. We know it's frightening. That's why there are support groups. Stick with the winners in the support group. Don't get stuck with the people who become martyrs and use their woundedness to leverage help from other people. So the book is Why People Don't Heal and How They Can. So tonight we talked about why people don't heal. In the next episode, we're going to talk about how you can. Now, you've learned many skills, hopefully, listening to Barry Aftercare podcast and in the Barry Aftercare program. If you're not a part of the Barry Aftercare program, get in it, barryaftercare.com. And also other support groups, therapists, coaches. We talk about taking advantage of, not like abusing, but utilizing. That's the word I'm looking for. God, utilizing the help that's available to you. So the book, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can by Carolyn Meese. We talked about the title and the author, Reasons People Don't Heal, reminding you, you do have a choice to heal. We talked about woundology and some questions to ask yourself. I'm going to remind you of those questions as we wrap up here, right? Do I really want to heal? Do I really want to heal from this disease of obesity? And if so, to what lengths am I willing to go? You have to figure out what you need to do. If you need to give up sugar, if you need to stay away from certain people, if you need to stay away from certain places, are you willing to go that far? You have choices. Ask yourself the hard questions. Are you willing to do what it takes? I can't answer that for you. All right. So those are your take-home messages. Ask yourself the questions. And if you're willing, get into the rooms. There's a website called intherooms.com for addictions. There's a website called barryaftercare.com and a very wonderful group of people who are working hard to overcome their wounds, learn the skills, and live a healthy lifestyle. So if you want to stick with the winners, as they say, join Barry Aftercare, B-A-R-I, aftercare.com. I would encourage you to read the book that we're talking about tonight, which is, again, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can by Carolyn M-Y-S-S, Meese, and encourage others to listen to the podcast. Here's what we're going to talk about in next week's episode for real, because this is a two-part series. We're going to talk about the five myths of healing that Carolyn Meese writes about and what people can do if they make the decision to heal. If they make the decision that they're willing to make the changes, if they're willing to go through the fear of change and to focus on the fact that we do all have choices. And even though it's difficult, we, as in we in Berry Aftercare, are here to help you. And there are many other forms of support that you can turn to. And remember, until next week, we're always talking about your health, which, my friends, is always your responsibility this day and every day. I'll be with you again next week. Thanks for joining me. Very much appreciate your time and your willingness to change. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of Berry Aftercare, the podcast. The information shared on this podcast is considered psychoeducation and does not constitute therapy or a therapeutic relationship. Be sure to check out all the great information I provide, much of it free, by visiting my website at www.ConnieStapletonPhD.com. Be sure to leave your positive comments for this podcast and listen in next week to learn more ways to live your best post-op life.